Hold it, fellas. That don't move me. Let's get real, real gone for a change.
It's time to get real gone on the Rockabilly and Blues Radio Hour. Here's your host, James Riley.
Hey, this is Jammin' James Riley on your favorite hour for great music and interviews. Well, it's the Rockabilly and Blues Radio Hour. Coming up on the show today, we talk with one of Roy Orbison's sons, Alex Orbison, about recent Roy releases.
I swear, every movie I saw for an entire year, that would play right before the movie. And for me, personally, it's a unique way to connect with my dad.
So much more coming up from Alex in just a little bit, along with some tunes from his dad. Now, let's start the show off with some artists that were part of the Winter Dance Party tour from 1959. As we know, February 3rd, 1959 is the date of that fateful plane crash that took the lives of Buddy Holly, the Big Bopper, and Ritchie Valens. We'll hear from each of them here in just a moment, along with Dion, who was also one of the headliners of that tour, but thankfully did not get on the plane. Now, while their lives were tragically cut short, their music lives on forever. We can hear a little bit of their music and pretty much all of the artists that have followed since them. Let's start things off with the one and only Buddy Holly.
Hi, this is Buddy Holly. The Crickets and I are really happy to be coming your way on the Winter Dance Party. We certainly hope to see all our old friends and be making some new ones too.
Well, we gonna rock to the rhythm and the blues tonight. Rock is everything gonna be high, cause tonight we gonna rock to the rhythm and the blues. Well, I got a little gal I call Ivy, come from Memphis, Tennessee, and tonight we gonna rock around with Ivy, Ivy says she gonna do me right tonight. I'm gonna wear my blue suede shoes tonight, and tonight we gonna rock around with Ivy, Ivy. Well, we gonna rock to the rhythm and the blues tonight. That's everything gonna be high, cause tonight we gonna rock to the rhythm and the blues. I'm gonna shout, laugh, holler, and giggle tonight. I'm gonna shake it just a little in the middle of the night. Cause tonight we're gonna rock around with our feet, holler, holler, feet. Well, Mr. Cop will be tonight. If you try to put a stop to me tonight, cause tonight we're gonna rock around with our feet, holler, holler, holler. Well, we're gonna rock to the rhythm and the blues tonight. Rock is everything gonna be high. Cause tonight we're gonna rock to the rhythm and the blues.
Hi, gang, this is the Big Bopper, and I'll be on your winter dance party coming your way real soon. We'll be swinging and singing and looking forward to saying hello, baby, to all of you in person.
Well, I pick up any coats and a ballerina shoe. Pretty ponytails, give me the blue. Driving me crazy, driving me wild. I love my baby, cause she love me in style. Oh, the first time I saw this pretty little miss, she used to charge me a dollar a kiss. I'd bring all my money in a paper sack. Well, now my baby say, here your money back. Oh, pink petticoat, ballerina shoes, driving me crazy, give me the blue. I go a ring a ding a ding a with my honey bun. I will say, oh, Bopper, you the only one. Oh, when you see me, you're walking on the down. I got my arm around my baby and she looks so sweet. I wanna put her in my pocket like a kangaroo do. In a pink petticoat and a ballerina shoe. Now everybody have a fit time.
Yeah. you the only one. When you see me walking on down the street, I got my arm around my baby and she looks so sweet. I want to put her in my pocket like a kangaroo do, in a big petticoat and a ballerina suit.
Pink Petticoats, that's Giles Perry Richardson Jr., also known as the Big Bopper. Now, this opening segment of the show, we're remembering the Big Bopper, Buddy Holly, and Richie Valens, who we'll hear from in just a moment. They lost their lives nearly 57 years ago on February 3rd in a plane crash while on tour together for the Winter Dance Party Tour. The fourth headliner is an artist we'll have on the show soon to talk about his latest project. Now, he did not get on the plane, but did get back on the bus and traveled to the next town on the tour, only to find out about his friends that were killed in the plane crash. With the B-side of their 1958 hit No One Knows, here's Dion and the Belmonts with I Can't Go On, Rosalie.
Everybody, this is Richie Valens. I will be on the Winter Dance Party coming your way very shortly. I will be having a ball singing for you, and I hope to see you all real soon.
Well, I got a girl named Bonnie Maroney. Well, she's as skinny as a stick of macaroni. Hard to see her rock and roll the routine song. Thank you.
Friday, February 26th, at the Lancaster Roots and Blues Festival in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Your chance to see Quentin Jones' Rock and Roll Review. Quentin Jones will lead an all-star house band, including Liberty DeVito on drums and Kenny Aronson on bass guitar. Featured in the review are Reach Around Rodeo Clowns, Danny B. Harvey and Annie Marie Lewis, guitar legend Eddie Angel, Kenley Collins, and the queen of the pumping piano, Linda Gail Lewis. Ticket information available at LancasterRootsAndBlues.com. Hey, we're back on the Rockabilly and Blues Radio Hour, and we just heard Richie Valens and the tune Boney Maroney. In the first part of our show, we played each of the four headliners on the Winter Dance Party Tour from 1959, three of whom, unfortunately, were tragically killed in a plane crash nearly 57 years ago on February 3rd, 1959. We lost Buddy Holly, Richie Valens, and the Big Bopper. Dion did not get on the plane. We'll actually be talking to him soon in a coming week or two about his brand new project. Stay tuned for that. Now, this is our 100th episode. And also to help celebrate, we're talking to Alex Orbison, one of Roy Orbison's sons, in just a moment about a couple of recent projects, including the previously unreleased One of the Lonely Ones album and a 13-CD box set from the MGM years. From one of the CDs included in there, an album titled There Is Only One Roy Orbison. It's a tune Roy Orbison wrote. Now, here's an interview segment with Roy himself talking about pitching Claudette to the Everly Brothers.
We were backstage, and I met the boys and Ike Everly, their father. And everybody backstage was pitching songs. They would sit down and say, sing four or five songs for the boys. And I said, I don't think I'll do that. I won't impose on them. I started to leave the dressing room, and they said, Roy, do you have any songs? I said, I've got one song. So I sat down and sang that for them, and they liked it very much and wrote the lyric down on the top of a shoebox, took it back to Nashville and recorded it, and it was a code number one with All I Have to Do Is Dream.
Well, I've got a brand new baby and I feel so good. She loves me even better than I thought she would. I'm on my way to her house and I've run out of breath. When I see her tonight, I'm gonna squeeze it to death. The closet, a pretty little pet closet. Night, I'll yell for more, more, more closet. Pretty little bed closet. Never make me fret, closet. The greatest little girl that I've ever met. I get the best loving that I'll ever get from closet. Closet.
Jammin' James Riley from the Rockabilly and Blues Radio Hour, and I'm on location in the beautiful Orbison Building here in Nashville, Tennessee, with Alex Orbison. How you doing, Alex?
Really good, really good. Thanks for having me.
Man, it's cool to be out here again. Now, last time we were here, we were talking about the 25th anniversary of Mystery Girl. And it was cool because you said that you guys were planning that and didn't even necessarily plan it to be the 25th anniversary, which is kind of cool.
I know, and here we are now on the 50th anniversary from the MGM years. Anniversaries really just line themselves up, and I'm really thankful for that.
The box set we're talking about, Roy Orbison, the MGM years, 1965, 1973. Talk about Roy leaving Monument for MGM.
So in 1964, my dad wrote a little song called Oh Pretty Woman. Bill Deese had said it was written on a Friday, recorded on the next Friday, and it was on top of all the charts the following Friday, and it was the fastest thing he had ever seen. From that, my dad really became an international superstar. He had been
traveling and touring, but the demand to see him play Pretty Woman was worldwide. So that tour basically lasted from November, December of 64 all the way until 1965. And in the midst of this, Roy's record contract with Monument came to an end. My dad started shopping labels and basically looked at every major label. The backstory is that in 1958, my dad came up here to go on RCA label and follow Elvis and get a major label deal. And that fell apart and he didn't have any hits and basically starved here in Nashville. And my dad and Claudette were making fried dough balls, basically. And they made that, you know, just with flour. All they had was flour and water. And so when they had gotten done starving it out, they moved back to Texas. And so my dad had came back to record with Fred in the following year, and they did extremely well. But my point is, I think that they had thought about going to a major label, and also MGM had on the table the idea that they would put Roy in motion pictures as well. And so my dad was obsessed with Hollywood. His very first job was changing the sign at the Rigg Theater in Wink, Texas. Wartime inflation from World War II had made the price of tickets go up, where it was 2 bits, which is a quarter, 2 bits for entry and popcorn. Inflation made the price of the tickets go up to 2 bits themselves. My dad said that blew the popcorn. And so he asked the owner who was changing the sign. And my dad was a little hustler when he was young. He looked up and said, "Hey, I can change that sign, and it's only going to cost you 1 bag of popcorn every week." My dad really had an affinity for Hollywood, so I know that swayed him in moving from Monument. There were some songs that my dad liked that Fred didn't let through, and a lot of those songs ended up on the first MGM album. If You Can't Say Something Nice was a song that my dad had got from my grandmother, and then I'm in a Blue Blue Mood. It's funny, my dad tells these stories about Fred not wanting songs with the title Blue. And he said, you know, they submitted a song, and Fred said, "There's 3 blue songs in the charts this week. You can't have it." And then on the first MGM album, you see, "I'm in a Blue Blue Mood." So, and the MGM contract was very unique. It was a 20-year contract that would each year get an advance that would total $1 million by the time the contract was done. And my dad got in writing that he had total creative freedom from what songs he chose to the way they were recorded, where they were recorded, all the way down to how they were mastered and mixed. And so I know that was a big lure for any artist wants total freedom. And it was sad to part ways with Fred. And I know that Fred had been bumping heads with my dad's then manager, Wesley Rose, so I think that probably definitely played into it as well. My dad moved from Fred Foster's Monument Studios, which was in downtown Nashville at the time. It's no longer there. And he went back to where they had recorded Only the Lonely and Crying and Running Scared, which was RCA Studio B. And he went back with all the A-team players, and basically the big thing that changed was Fred wasn't in the recording booth, and Bill Justice, the engineer, was no longer there. And basically everything else had kind of stayed the same.
I'm in a blue, blue mood now that you're gone.
Uh-huh.
I'm in a blue, blue mood. From the album There Is Only One Roy Orbison, an album that can be found in the 13-album box set MGM Years 1965 to 1973. Roy's son Alex Orbison is our guest this hour.
This covers 1965 to 1973, and 8 years by today's standards is not a very long time. You know, artists might get 3, maybe 4 albums in, but your dad did 12, I think, studio records, and then another album of B-sides and some rarities, but that's quite a output.
Yeah, the other thing about the deal that was crazy and unique was it called for 3 long play records that would be at least half an hour long, and which was sometimes 12 and some the later 11 songs, but 3 LPs a year to be delivered, and then singles along with that, and a movie. And so one of the ways that they had planned to get around this stuff was to do cover albums. And he did an entire record of Don Gibson. It's Roy Orbison sings Don Gibson. And my dad had done Don Gibson cuts before, and they compiled that record together while they were doing the production for the movie, which was The Fastest Guitar Alive, starring Roy Orbison. There was a lot going on creatively with that, but the looking back as a Orbison fan, I think the box set had 152 Orbison songs, and so you have 152 songs there, and then there was unreleased material that we put in a separate album, and it just ends up being a windfall for this music, which there's so much of it, and it ends up being that a lot of it is really fantastic.
Everywhere I go, heartache just hurts me so. I can't escape from you, and I'm hurting. Sorrow is by my side, misery is my guide. Every minute is blue, and I'm hurting. This poor fool paid. Time can't heal my yesterday. Loving you, loving you, I cry each tear in vain. My hopes are all the same. My future is nothing but blue, and I'm hurting.
Las Vegas 19 is April 14th through 17th at the Orleans Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, featuring guitar legend Dick Dale. Brian Setzer's Rockabilly Riot.
There's a rumble in Brighton tonight. Rumble in Brighton tonight.
The Polecats.
Make a circuit with me.
The Stars of Rockabilly Show with Sleepy LaBeef. The Doo-Wop All-Star Show with Bobby Hendrix, Jack Scott, Rocky Burnett and Daryl Higham, Big Sandy and his Flyride Boys, Dave Phillips and the Hot Rod Gang, Jay Milano, Restless, and over 50 more artists.
But that's not all.
Burlesque Show, Deke's Guitar Geek Show, Car Show, Burlesque Bingo, Pool Parties, and so much more. It's Viva Las Vegas 19. For tickets and information, go to VivaLasVegas.net, and we'll see you there.
There's a rumble in Brighton tonight!
This is Jammin' James Riley, and from the album Roy Orbison Sings Don Gibson, we just heard Yes, I'm Hurting And that album is part of the MGM box set recently released. The MGM years, 1965 to 1973, a 13-album box set. Very, very cool. Now, we are spending our 100th episode of Rockabilly and Blues Radio Hour on location at the beautiful Orbison headquarters in Nashville, Tennessee, talking to Roy's son, Alex Orbison. Now, you can hear additional bonus footage of this interview, along with some additional songs, all of which we did not quite have room for in this hour. Rockabillyandblues.com is where you can find that. Rockabilly, the letter N, blues.com. Now let's get back into our talk with Alex Orbison.
One album title says it all for me. There is only one, Roy Orbison. And of course, from that project, the song, which some people might recognize too, from the Geico commercial.
Yeah, I'd love to say that we planned all that out because we had the commercial and Right Away was in it. And it's funny because on the artistic side, you know, my brothers and I are managing my dad's business and representing him. And so it's like, all right, well, now we're selling insurance or whatever. And everyone kind of had this conversation with our team at Orbison. And I actually was familiar with them and think they're some of the best commercials on TV. And the one that had preceded us was, it's a Geico ad with a horror plot line and how silly horror movies are. And so, you know, they're all screaming like, what do we do? And the girl says, oh, we should just get in the running van. It's right there. It's running. And then someone else yells and says, oh, no, let's go hide behind these chainsaws. And they go back there. And then, the horror movie guys, they're rolling his eyes. And it says, you know, that's just what they do. The fact that it was so funny made it an instant yes for us. And to bring Right Away back. And when I looked on Google and I typed in who sang, and the first thing came, or who's singing in the Geico commercial. And so for months after that, it was like one of the most asked questions on the internet. So that aspect of it worked as well. And the crazy thing is they did one that was a theater length. And so they had the high Orbison ending at the end, and it was structured a little different. And I swear, every movie I saw for an entire year, that would play right before the movie. And I'd always, you know, and for me personally, it's a unique way to connect with my dad. You know, I always like look up, I'm like, oh yeah, that's cool. And so it ended up being great timing.
Two wheels are turning, one girl a yearning, big motor burning the road. I'll ride the highway, I'm going my way, I leave a story untold. Pretty girls behind, big motor wind up right on away from here, right away. She won't approve of things I do or what I am, and I don't really give a she'll never see that I'll never be anyone but me. She thinks she needs me, she cries for me, but I know she's lying. From heartache and misery.
we talked about, you said it was a little bit of a mess where some of the things were released. Like Big O, was that even released in the United States at the time?
What you have is a major label that is doing what they can to stay on schedule with releasing three records a year. And 1965, they just started and did There's Only One Roy Orbison. And then in the following year, there's a lot of releases. The calendar year starts in January, and MGM, the deal was done July 1st. So from July to July, you turn in these three records, and then they come out following that. So MGM's story is laced with tragedy. And so Claudette Orbison, my dad's first wife, passed away in June 1966 in a motorcycle accident. It really threw the schedule off by delaying just 6 weeks to allow for my dad to grieve and then get back at it. Things had been on a global basis until then. And then Cry Softly, Lonely One, which was released but not in Australia and New Zealand. And there was two top 10 hits and then one top 40 hit on it there. And then the album was never released there. And so God fills the charts with these songs. And then this giant record doesn't come out. And they have to order it as imports, and it holds them off. And then you know, my statement, I think, in the liner notes is like, how are you going to sell records when they're not in the market where people want to buy them? And so that was a disaster. And then the soundtrack came out, and it was not released globally, too. And then following that, the Roy Orbison's Many Moods album did not come out in Europe, where arguably it would have sold the most, and there was charting hits there. And then following that, the Big O, it was a UK-only release, the Big O. So only in the UK. They had a number one in Australia on the Big O, Penny Arcade, and it wasn't released in Australia. So you're at the top of the charts, and there's no record repeatedly. And then Hank Williams' The Roy Orbison Way came out on the heels of that, and it was only in the United States. And there was no single. And so there's no single, and they only put out in the United States. Who knows how many of them were even made? You know, they make 50 or 200,000 of these things, and how many can you sell? If, you know, people later look back that were in Belgium and Europe, and they said that years had gone by, and then they realized that Roy had done this Hank Williams record, and they had to go, you know, and all of us record collectors, you'd have to go down to your local store and describe to them what it is and try to get a catalog number, and it was an import, and they had to wait and call someone, or, you know, you'd mail a letter in snail mail, and then a month later you get a reply. And so to even get this stuff has been impossible for people. And then after my dad left MGM in 1973, the last record was only released in the States, and it quickly was out of print. After my dad died, and they started printing it again, and my mom went to see, you know, they're supposed to call for consent. You're at least supposed to say that picture's good, or we like this, or, you know, thank you for doing that, or whatever. And so they'd started releasing them, and we looked through the contracts and realized that the rights had reverted back to us outside of the United States. And so the MGM deal was always Decca London outside and MGM inside. So it was never at one company. And so, you know, after making a lot of moves, after my mom passed away, we got it all at Universal, and my mom had actually started the talks, and we were able to finish them, which was really nice. And so this first time ever, the MGM is all in one place, and it's all available globally. And also the B-sides and singles is 16 songs that never made it to albums, starting in 1968. And so there's 16 songs that came out, and even if they were hits or not, you know, you're talking about top 40 hits that never made it to albums. So, you know, that just adds to the vastness and the rareness of it. You know, they, when we pulled them up in stereo, I was like, I didn't ever hear harp in there. Or like, just listen to that drum fill. There's literally things that you could not hear before because they were just mixing down to mono. Late 60s, early 70s, a lot of times they'd smush the sound down to get a little more lo-fi. So when we got really clear and turned things up, it was like a whole new experience.
Oh, well, you can't be my loving baby. You ain't got the style. I'm gonna get some herbie gone low that'll drive a cool cat wild. We're gonna roll on down the line. I'm gonna do right all the time. Well, I'm gonna show you you ain't so hot. I'm gonna get the one you ain't got. She'll be sweet, won't do me wrong. She'll be cool and quiet. We're gonna roll on down the line. We're gonna do right all the time.
then you know my car's gonna go and roll, roll on down the line. We're gonna do right, do right all the time. Well, well, I'm gonna show you, you ain't so hot. I'm gonna get what you ain't got. But you'll be sweet, won't do me wrong. But you'll be cool and quiet, you're gonna kind of roll, roll on down the line. We're gonna do right, do right all the time. Well, we're gonna move on down the line. We're gonna get some love and it's really fine. You'll be sweet, won't do me wrong. And when we get to going, you know we're gonna go, go, roll. We're gonna do right all the time. We're gonna do right all the time. We're gonna do right.
Go, 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 down the line from the album Big O from the Roy Orbison box set, the MGM years 1965 to 1973. We're on location at the Orbison headquarters in Nashville, Tennessee with Roy's son, Alex Orbison.
Something that really struck me is some of the biggest charting songs seem to kind of come from the Monument time period. But when you listen to this box set with all these albums and some songs I wasn't familiar with, and it's just mind-blowing, and production and everything, just fantastic.
The big leaps in his voice was at Sun Records, he had to sing over the band, and they would record all day long and all night. You know, they were in there working the songs up and doing takes, and his voice got stronger through there. And at Monument, he became Roy Orbison, you know, following from Only the Lonely into Crying, where they're exploring and it's getting bigger, and then Running Scared, where it's like, hello, here's Roy Orbison that we know. Touring Pretty Woman had built his voice up to the point where he almost sounds like a same voice but a different guy by the time you get into 1965 to 1968. And the big thing with the unreleased record is that he had found the power at Monument and then really had claimed the power, and his voice is so much stronger from right away on. You're like, oh my God, this guy, you know, this is crazy. And he had really got control of it for the unreleased record. While the Monument stuff had charted more, my dad really had found his groove and the power of his voice and the velvetiness and all that at MGM really had soared to new heights.
Well, thanks a lot, thank you. Now I'm the talk of the town. Of all the fools they drink to, I am the king of the clowns. I play the lonely joker. I take what fun I can find. I laugh when things aren't funny. I throw away my last dime. You're not mine, so I waste my time in pantomime. It's pantomime. I'm ready for lonely fun time, yeah. Loud music may dull my mind. Black coffee and electric sunshine.
Inside.
It's the second annual Nashville Boogie Vintage Weekender.
It's a Nashville Boogie, boogie to the break of dawn.
May 12th through the 15th at the Opryland Hotel in Nashville Palace. In Music City, USA, Nashville, Tennessee. Musical guests include Reverend Horton Heat, the Queen of Rockabilly, Wanda Jackson, the Blasters, Hokey Lafarge, and over 30 more artists including Dale Watson, James Enfield, Slim Jam Phantom, Tibbs Preston, Levi Dexter, the Planet Rockers, Marcel Pontempi, Big Sandy and his Fly Ride Boys, the Go-Getters, Rosie Flores, Woody Pines, Hillbilly Casino, Chris Casello, and lots more. And don't forget the Western Roundup Fashion Show by Riley Reed, the Pinup Pageant by Bernie Dexter, and the Indoor Pre-1972 Car Show, and the Sunday Night Grand Finale Party at the Grand Ole Opry featuring Chris Isaac. It's the Nashville Boogie Vintage Weekender. For tickets and information, go to NashvilleBoogie.com, and we'll see y'all here.
Hi, this is Wendell Jones.
And this is Quentin Jones from the Reach Around Rodeo Clowns.
And you're listening to the Rockabilly and Blues Radio Hour with your host, Jammin' James Riley.
All right.
Your source for rockabilly, blues, surf roots, early country, and rock and roll, this is the Rockabilly and Blues Radio Hour. Now we just heard a pantomime by Roy Orbison. It's from the album The Classic Roy Orbison, which can be found on the MGM Years box set. Now another new project is the previously unreleased 1969 album One of the Lonely Ones. Now we're on location at the Orbison headquarters in Nashville, Tennessee, talking with Roy's son, Alex Orbison.
Finally, a project, One of the Lonely Ones, came out, recorded in 69, unreleased until now. Take us through, obviously a lot of tragedy happening before this. Take us through what was going on with him before this and maybe why this never came out.
The story with this record really starts in 1968. A lot of things going on. It had been 2 years since Claudette had passed away. And out of that time, my dad was out as a single guy, for a year traveling the world and trying to get back in the game a little reluctantly. And one night in July, I think, of 1968, some of the guys in the band wanted to drag him out to a nightclub. And my dad didn't really go to nightclubs that much. And lucky for me, he ran into my mom at that nightclub. And they hit it off very well. So he started falling in love. And things looked up in the summer of 1968. It was the 25th anniversary of Acuff Rose, which, just a little bit of Nashville history, if you made it to Acuff Rose, you were basically a made man. They were the big deal in town. And so their 25th anniversary coincided with them building a recording studio. And my dad's record, Many Moods, was coming out. And so there's a huge push to get back on track with Roy after the Cry Softly album previously wasn't released globally. And so he had taken a long time to put this album together and everyone's really happy with it. And he's touring and the singles in the UK were doing the best. And so he's touring the UK. And he had a top 40 hit with Walk On, and I think Heartache was in the charts. The last night of the tour, he gets a call that the house in Hendersonville had burned down and killed my two oldest brothers in the fire. And that's all the information he got. And so he got on a plane immediately and came home and found out that the house had burned down. There was an explosion and it had killed my two oldest brothers, and survived was my brother Wesley and my grandparents, Orby Lee and Nadine Orbison. And so my dad took the rest of the year off. The album was supposed to come out late September, early October. And so they shelved the album and pushed it. It got pushed into May. And they thought, all right, well, we'll just push it to halfway, like the end of May or whatever. My dad, to cope, started going into the studio January 21st, 1969. And so he wrote for 3 weeks and came up with a bunch of Orbison and Bill D's originals, and then started recording these songs. And the Many Moods album was due out. And my dad started touring, and basically the Many Moods albums had pushed the One of the Lonely Ones album to the side. All things seemed like they were gonna be back in track, but I do not think the Many Moods record was available in Europe. He started running into the same old problems. part of the blunt fact with the one of the Lonely One sessions is he recorded the albums he needed to fulfill his contract and get back on the good foot. And that was the Hank Williams record, Hank Williams, the Roy Orbison Way, and then the Big O album were recorded. And so MGM didn't accept the Big O record. He wanted to do a live record and recorded a live in studio record. But MGM didn't release it. So London Decca wanted to release it in only the UK. The Many Moods wasn't a global release, and in the middle of all this, they stopped paying his record advance halfway through the year. And so he got in a dispute over, frankly, the payment. You have all these things crossing right there, and my dad at that point thought, well, they had defaulted on their payment, and they didn't accept my live record, and so they're not doing their job, and they're not releasing my stuff globally. So I'm out of here. If you don't fulfill your side of the contract, then let's go to court and your side's null and void. So the One of the Lonely Ones sat until 1972, and they actually did pull one song. They would always pull one song from the album before on the MGM. And I don't know why, it was just tradition. After the very first recordings, they would record in the old days, the very first ones had 13 or 14, and they would take them, and the next session had 13, and they would take the 13th song and pull it forward. On the One of the Lonely Ones sessions, You'll Never Walk Alone is the first song, and we pulled that from the Many Moods sessions. They had done it in the Many Moods sessions, and I pulled that one up. And that was the cool thing about doing the box set before, is I got to see not only how they were mixing Roy Orbison records and making them, but how they were doing the track listing, how many songs they had, and then how many songs they were doing a session, and where they were pulling from.
When you walk through a storm, hold your head up high, and don't be afraid of the dark. At the end of a storm, there's a golden sky and a sweet silver sound of a lark.
Never Walk Alone from the previously unreleased Roy Orbison album, One of the Lonely Ones. His son, Alex Orbison, is our guest this hour.
What's next for you guys?
Since I've come on at Orbison, which is exactly 4 years ago, and I was doing my own thing playing music, and my brother Roy Jr. was working here, and Wesley was doing his own thing writing songs, and we all came together to do this. And one thing I've learned is that people ask me what happened with my career being a drummer. I don't have time to do anything else. Like, this is a 25-hour-a-day job. And there's always something more with Orbison. And that's the main reason why I came on with Gusto, is because of the opportunity that even after all this time, there's never been a book that we have seen that was written about my dad that actually we could endorse. You know, you got to have a guy doing a whole biography that never interviews Roy. The one came out when he was alive, and my mom looked and with shock. The newspaper, someone came over and showed it to us, and she says, why wouldn't he have called us? you know? And so someone that we know, who is a friend of mine now, a good friend actually, has written this incredible Orbison book that we're gonna work on over the next year. And I can't say exactly when it's gonna come out because it takes so much work to put together these things. But I will say this, he's worked on this book now for 14 years, I think. And it is the most extensive and most correct. Like he has tracked down every receipt or anything that anyone ever happened to do with Roy, you know, anything that was ever printed. So this book is going to be a real good one. When we did the Mystery Girl project, we did the documentary just on, we did a non-feature length, like a short behind the scenes documentary for the Mystery Girl Unraveled. And I've got the documentary bug. I got bit bad by that. So I'm just itching to do the next one. And we're going to take a look at my dad's whole life over the next year. And that's going to be another longer term project, but that starts in the new year. I'm super excited to get on that. And for us, we look through each phase of what my dad had done and look at each record deal and say, what could we do within that? I think we need to go and look at back toward the end of his career and look for some 80s stuff. I always look at the Black and White Night and think of what we could do and potentially work on a documentary behind that. You know, I have the alternate footage, and there's a lot more of that story to be told. And it's just such an incredible ride, that show. And so I've been listening to that a lot, and that would be a place where I'd like to focus. Some bigger things I can't even talk about yet, which is even more exciting, but I'm going to be really busy. I don't know when you're actually going to be hearing the stuff that I do, but I do want to try to slot a release for spring, summer of 2016, and then see where we are with later years project. If that would be the Black and White Night, I would be looking at maybe spring of 2017 for that release or something. And we're going to do one thing that's special in between then, but I can't tell you exactly what that is or I'd give it away. So this is the most secrecy and shroudedness we've had going on in Orbison. When I came on, we wanted all transparency. But now there's so many pokers in the fire that we've been approached by people outside and things are getting really excited. And the good thing is we have a ton of good video footage of my dad. We have still things that no one's ever heard before, and also curating the story with the documentaries or doing behind the scenes shorts and having the video assets to be behind that you can go and look and see what these guys were doing is just so cool. So needless to say, it's going to be a busy year. Big things on the horizon here.
I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to all the new releases. I'm sure we'll have you on again. In fact, it sounds like you may just have to be a co-host of the show here before long. So anyway, thanks a lot, Matt.
Thank you very, very, very much. And I'm excited for several reasons. And the future is bright here at Orbison. And if you were going to make a joke, you'd say that it's bright enough that you're going to need shades. Hey, this is Alex Orbison, and I'm listening to my favorite hour of great music. It's the Rockabilly and Blues Radio Hour with Jammin' James Riley.
Elijah was a wooden Indian standing by the door. He fell in love with an Indian maid over in the antique store. Elijah just stood there and never let it show. So she could never answer yes or no. He always wore his Sunday feathers and held a tomahawk. The maiden wore her beads and braids and hoped someday he'd talk. Elijah, too stubborn to ever show a sign, because his heart was made of knotty pine. His heart was set on the Indian maid with the coal black hair. Elijah just stood there and never let it show. So she could never answer yes or no. Poor old Elijah, he never got a kiss. Poor old Elijah, he don't know what he missed. Is it any wonder that his face is red? That poor old wooden head.
the Indian maid and took her oh so far away. But old Kalijah stayed. Kalijah just stands there as lonely as can be and wishes he was still an old pine tree.
That's Kalijah from the album Hank Williams, The Roy Orbison Way, as part of the box set, the MGM years 1965 to 1973. Now, for more interviews and tunes not heard during this hour, look for bonus footage from Alex Orbison, available soon on our website, rockabillyandblues.com. That's rockabilly, the letter N, blues.com. Now, trust me, Alex has so many great stories about the making of this box set and releasing the previously unreleased album, One of the Lonely Ones, so you definitely want to seek that out. Now, you've been listening to the 100th episode of the Rockabilly and Blues Radio Hour. Now, so much more great music and interviews coming up in future episodes, so stay tuned for that. Until next time, it's Jammin' James Riley saying keep on rockin'.